Tom Lutz is the author of Doing Nothing, a history of loafers, loungers, slackers, and bums in America. Lutz told Steve Paulson why he decided to do something about doing nothing.
It began when my son, Cody, at the age of 18, moved into my house from the East Coast, where he was living with his mother, and proceeded to lie on the couch, kind of day in and day out, doing nothing. Hence the title, Doing Nothing. And I was amazed at how angry it made me to see him lying there, even though I had spent an enormous amount of time doing nothing when I was exactly his age, spent time as a kind of wandering hippie numbskull around the country. So I really should have been able to understand that he was in a particular stage of life. And it literally made me angry. My body would flood with hormones and emotion. And I had not been an angry parent. I didn't want to be an angry parent. I had one of those, and I didn't want to repeat that mistake. And I'd been successful he has a couple of older sisters, for over 20 years. So it kind of shocked me. And I really started looking into the subject of doing nothing in order to understand my own odd emotional reaction to seeing him laying around watching TV, which obviously I'd seen him doing at various times for 18 years already.
So instead of blowing up at him, you went off and wrote a book.
Yeah, I would go back downstairs to my study and kind of cool down, come back up and say, well, how's the resume coming along? His resume, of course, at that point was, I went to high school. There wasn't much more to add to it. And he would say, oh, I'm working on it.
Now, there's a difference, though, between sitting on the couch watching TV day after day and traveling around the country, knocking around, you know, working as a short order cook, getting some manual labor jobs. I mean, that it may seem like doing nothing, but actually those are all life experiences. And really doing nothing, I mean, being a couch potato, I can see why that would get to you.
Yeah. Now, of course, I have this somewhat romanticized version of my own past that I can tell, in which I do a lot of, you know, I guess interesting things. I hop the freight trains and I travel around Europe and I do all sorts of things. But I also spend an enormous amount of time just, you know, smoking pot and laying in a hammock and doing absolutely nothing. So I there are two different ways to see my own story. Certainly my own father thought I was doing a whole lot of nothing.
Hmm. Now, is doing nothing the same as being bored?
No, and actually, you know, I am an expert at doing nothing, as I said, but I'm not really an expert on boredom. I studied people who claimed that doing nothing was the highest form of human activity, an ideal. And boredom, on the other hand, is most often people who have a sense that there's nothing to do, that there's nothing worth doing or nothing, certainly nothing to do at the moment. So on the one hand, you've got people who are bored because they're doing nothing and they don't like the fact that they're doing nothing. On the other hand, you have people who are doing nothing and they are proud of the fact that they're doing nothing. And those are the real classic slackers in Western history.
Now, why would some people say that doing nothing is the highest thing, the sort of the greatest goal in life?
Well, it's a rejection of the fundamental cultural values, most significantly the values placed on work. And it's often, of course, people who don't think that the work that they're being offered is worth doing. And so to do nothing is a form of resistance to wage slavery or boring, horrible jobs.
So basically the idea there is that to work, you're buying into the system and it's in essence the opposite of pleasure, the opposite of enjoying life.
Well, some people argue that you have to do nothing in order to enjoy life. I mean, whether it's a kind of Zen version of it, a contemplative life version of it, or people who think that even our standard entertainments, you know, watching TV, watching Fagoni films, these things are ridiculous as well, and we don't want to do those. We want out of all of the current state of things.
Now, there's a long history of people who have written about doing nothing. And one of the ironies, of course, is that those people who often exalt doing nothing have been very busy getting the word out. Well, I mean, often they're out writing books advocating the joys of doing nothing. But anyway, Herman Melville wrote a famous story, Bartleby the Scrivener, which to some degree touches on this subject, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Bartleby is working significantly on Wall Street. This is an 1853 story, 1853. And he starts off being a fairly good worker for a lawyer. He's a copier. He's basically a human Xerox machine. But then he just stops working, and his boss asks him to do something. He says, I'd prefer not to.
Bartleby, come in here and verify this notice of petition to administer an estate.
I'd prefer not to.
Bartleby, come in here and verify this notice of petition to administer an estate.
I would prefer not to.
Prefer not to? What What do you mean, prefer not to? Here, take it and verify the notice.
I'd prefer not to.
Public records.
But it's part of your job. Are you refusing to do your job?
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Waxman.
It remains a mystery in the story. It's one of the great stories in American literary history, and partly because it's very, very hard to say exactly what it's about. But he stops working, and it's confusing to everyone around him, especially his boss, who just doesn't know quite how to deal with him. It's not outright rebellion. He never says, I refuse to. He says, I'd prefer not to. So it's an odd kind of passive resistance to the state of things.
So why does he stop doing his work?
Well, he eventually is such a slacker, Bartleby, that he stops eating as well, even though his boss, after he's thrown in prison, in debtor's prison, and into the tombs, his boss tries to get him things to eat, and he simply refuses to, he prefers not to eat, and eventually dies from doing nothing. So from the perspective of Melville, perhaps this is a story of what happens when you drop out completely, a warning tale. But the boss, the lawyer who hires him, is a very kind of small-minded. He's brought to a certain kind of empathy by Bartleby, partly because he can't understand him. But the boss is certainly not who we want to be. As we read the story, we're more on Bartleby's side than we are on the boss's, but we can't be on either side, really.
And yet this is not exact. You wouldn't think this would be a prescription to be one of the great literary stories in American cultural history. I mean, it would seem to be this dead-end life of Bartleby. What gives it such legs?
We are a culture that's obsessed with work. Europeans make fun of us for always asking the first thing when we meet somebody, what's your name, number one, number two, what do you do? And Europeans find this, depending on their class, either ridiculous or déclassé. Tocqueville noticed it immediately in the 1830s. We're a culture that has a very strong work ethic. When Max Weber writes about the Protestant work ethic, he finds the prime example of it in Benjamin Franklin. We're a country obsessed with work and therefore obsessed with not working at the same time. So Office Space, one of the great slacker movies, is about living in cubicles and entering reports into your computer all day long.
Corporate accounts payable. Nina speaking.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
We have sort of a problem here.
Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot, but it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
Yeah, no, I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil. What's happening?
Now, of course, if we ever had a perfect slacker or a perfect loafer or a perfect lounger, we don't know who they are, right? They're lost to history because they don't leave a trace. They really do nothing. If you really do nothing, nobody knows who you are. So the people we know, the people who have left a trace, have left a trace because they did some kind of work that made people sit up and take notice. So we have a select group of people who are doing nothing who are the famous slackers. And there are also, these images like Charlie Chaplin's Little Tramp, who are, just fictional characters. People love to consume images of the slackers. We love Peter in Office Space.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
Good one.
Oh, that's terrific, Peter.
Because we love these characters, authors sometimes represent themselves as that character, like Kerouac, represent himself as a guy that's just wandering around the country doing nothing. But in fact, he was a very hardworking novelist. There's a kind of market value to representing yourself as a slacker.
What happens when you get to the 1980s? There was that movie, Slacker, that came mm-hmm. out. Is that redefining this idea in any particular way?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Linklater film is interesting because it really does rename this character for us, right? They are slackers from then until the present, partly because of that movie. And those characters are running around a bit too. They're walking around at least. They're bumping into each other on the street. And they're often very energetic in their discussion of, the Smurfs.
A friend of mine has this real weird theory about Smurfs, but, I've been thinking about it. I think it's kind of cool. Actually, I kind of agree with it. It's like, He's talking about, like, Krishna. You know, like, Smurfs are blue. And, like, he's saying that Smurfs are, like, getting kids, like, used to seeing blue people. And it's like, you know, with Smurfs being blue, kids see blue people. They, like, relate to Smurfs. And they relate to blue people when Krishna comes about, you know. And I don't know. I kind of agree with that.
There's this kind of constant activity and constant talking and constant moving around, but also a sense that whatever, you know, whatever people are doing, they're doing it kind of to get by. So the woman who's selling Madonna's pap smear, she's really not fully engaged in pap smear sales. That's not her. That's not her reason for being on the earth. That's not why she, you know, that's not why she's just doing it just to turn the buck that she needs to get by. And people are willing to get by in fairly low financial burden ways.
Well, you also get the sense that there's not a clear dividing line between just being bored and being a slacker in the sense of objecting to wage slavery. I mean, the two, you're kind of both bored and you don't want to get a real job.
Yeah. Now, I mean, there isn't an enormous amount of boredom in that film, right? The people who are engaging with each other are whether it's about aliens who are amongst us or whatever their pet theory is, they're fairly energetic about the theory. And they want to do things like have a ritual for this guy to get over his breakup by throwing out everything related to his girlfriend. So they throw the typewriter that he wrote love poems off the bridge. You know, these kinds of whatever the issue is, they're actually, they're not bored. They're engaged. They're just not engaged with anything that looks like work. They're not engaged in, they don't have careers. They don't have pension plans. They don't have savings accounts, but they're not exactly bored. Now in Office Space, Peter and his coworkers are kind of bored. And that's what kind of pushes him out of that work world. It's the boredom of his job is the problem, and figuring out, you know, kind of this blissful doing nothing that he's into in the middle of the film is his alternative to that boredom.
Is there anything to be said for boredom? Like, can that be a virtue?
Oh yeah, I mean, boredom is exactly like I say. Boredom is what gets Peter out of his job finally, right? Boredom can be a great motivator. The person who's on the couch and has a fully developed slacker philosophy and says, I am doing nothing for the good of the planet. I'm going to leave as small a footprint as I can, and that means I'm not even going to move and burn up calories. You know, that kind of theory of why it's best to do nothing doesn't move anybody forward. But after being on the couch for a number of years, one might get bored enough to actually do something. That seems like a good thing if you don't believe that doing nothing is the highest human ideal.
Tom Lutz is the author of Doing Nothing, A History of Loafers, Loungers, Slackers, and Bums in America. He spoke with Steve Paulson.